woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell, Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures down 94, which is a pretty serious rally from the opening. NASDAQ futures down 375. They were down like 4%, now they're only down 2. Or you say they were down almost 5?
Bloodbath in the futures.
Yeah, it was not good, but now it's seemingly getting some better. We'll see how that goes. I mean, Trump says you got to take a little pain once in a while. You know, it's one of those things. We'll see how this flies out. I mean, it's very, very serious for a lot of people that have 401ks, that have IRAs. I mean, especially if you're in the Magnificent Seven, it was a horrendous week. I mean, people telling me their $2.5 million accounts, 1.3, 1.2. You know, I mean, it's depending on what you're in, it's been pretty brutal and continues to be here. But even though we've come back here, it's not exactly.
Gotta look at the 5-year picture here.
Can't trade 5 years ago, but okay. Don't tell me you're going to tell me it's still up. You're still okay.
Hang exactly.
On. Okay.
Exactly.
Well, it's a.
And not because okay, saying things can always get a lot worse.
But the margin debt was a record level last month. That always happens at a top. So the fact that people have leveraged against what they have is a problem, right?
Yeah, you got to be careful with that because you're. Double leveraged, all of a sudden a 50% move just wipes out your whole account.
Yeah, I mean, it's
ouch.
People are not. I mean, we're talking Apple under 183. I mean, it's down another $5 this morning.
It was down, I think, opened up down 178 ish.
We can say how much better it is, but it's still, I mean, who knows? We can come back all the way here today, but
my point is, we're still doing great on the. On the long-term timeline, and if there was real pain coming, that's a long way down from here.
How do you know where people got in? Are you doing a commercial for the places that just take your money and 1.5% and don't do anything for you except put you in stocks and tell you to keep it in there?
Oh, I don't know. My friends were calling me over the weekend saying, you know, what's this? What do I do? All that kind of stuff. Just got to keep the... If you're an investor, you got to keep a long-term perspective.
Why?
Why?
Yeah.
In general, that's a pretty good one.
Okay. There have been two times in my lifetime over a 10-year period, stocks were down.
Yeah, stocks always go down. I mean, there's only
I'm
two
saying
ways
over
for
a
them.
10-year period, they were down. What makes you think... I mean, nobody knows. That's the point.
Yeah. I personally, if I was... putting in $100 a week to the market, I would now be putting in $20 or $30 a week to the market.
Yeah, the point being is you are young, you are of employment age, and...
Yeah, if you're not, 80% bond sounds pretty good.
Well, no, but you couldn't do that because 5 years ago you didn't make anything on bonds, so you couldn't put anybody in there. And what the Fed has done, and this is my concern with this, and by the way, I'm not... disagreeing with anything you're saying. If you're 30 years old here, I guess it's a hiccup. But most of my clients aren't 30 years old. I have some. I have some that are 1 year old that have stuff that just people put money in their accounts. But it comes down to what part of the group are you in? And, I mean, somebody somewhere, if you look at NVIDIA, for instance, stock was at 150, and now it's at 91. All right, well, that's $60. Now, you're going to go back and say, gee, a year ago it was 80 at another sell-off, so I guess you're up 10. But if you're my client and you gave me your NVIDIA in January, I think we're down 60.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, what's in the past is in the past. Now we're playing for the future. If you got...
All right, but I'm saying it's $90.
Is it good, bad, or...
It's $60 of somebody somewhere thought... We're talking 25 billion shares outstanding. So 60 times 25 is... What, a trillion four has come out of this?
Yeah.
Somebody had that in their account and thought it was theirs, and now it's gone.
Yeah,
and God help them if they borrowed against it.
Not the sharpest tools in the shed there, but...
Well, I mean, it's... you know, and all everybody says you'd never sell it. It's a conviction stock. How many people in a firm that we still do a little bit of business for on the...
Can't save them all, Chief.
No.
And a lot of those people don't... And a lot of those people who are either fully all in on Fang or all in on Magnificent Seven or all in on whatever, a lot of those people are professionals, and they're just leveraged.
A lot of them listen to CNBC all day long. Put your money in. These are the stacks. I can tell by looking at somebody's portfolio when they walk in the door what station they watch.
Yeah. Well.
Isn't that scary?
It's lots of opinions, lots of everything. You know, who knows what's going to happen? But right now, I don't see.
But the opinions don't mesh. Here's something that I'm going to say is absolutely not an opinion, and this is coming from a professional who's been doing this for a long time. Over a period of time, and Joe Kernan on CNBC said this 5 years ago, interest rates went down to zero. He said that the Fed is forcing you further out on the risk curve. Okay, and Joe says he's talking to somebody who's talking about, gee, you know, not getting any money on bonds and so forth. And Joe said, well, you just have to force people out on further out on the risk curve, which means somebody. But now, for Joe, that's fine. I actually kind of like Joe. He's a pretty good dude on CNBC and has been for a long time. That's fine for you, Joe. You're not managing people's money. If your old man comes in here and he's 85, and he's never going to work a day in his life, how exactly do I force him out on the risk curve because you think that's what the Fed is telling me?
Hopefully 85-year-old says, you know, this is silly. I've seen a lot of this stuff before. I'm not going to buy into that.
Well, but for 4 or 5 years, they did fine. The market's gone straight up. The riskier stocks you're in, the better off you did. And I talk to people, you know, at least monthly that have their judge's pension, and, you know, it's all in the market, and they're all in the riskiest stocks. They're 85, 90% all in, which 30 years ago would never happen to somebody who's 80-some years old. But they're there. So people's portfolio, this you're right, markets go up and markets go down, but what I'm saying is people's portfolio right now, a lot of retired people, does not match
their hopefully 100% of that. Isn't in from the highs. I mean, if they're 85, hopefully they've got 50 to 60 years of solid contributions of someone, you know.
All right, so if somebody had $2.5 million, now they got 1.3. You think it's no problem?
It's not no problem, but I mean, that's still a. Well, how do you do that? No, the market's only down 14%.
Oh, what are you talking about? Somebody's stocks are down way more than that.
Yeah, but they're not all in from the top. That's they got the money from somewhere.
Well, I'm looking here at. What is this one? Is this NVIDIA? I think it is. 150 to 60. All right, it's $60. It's 40%, right?
Yeah, but that's not their whole portfolio.
I'm telling you, these are conviction stocks. The firm I was just with, their single biggest holding by far was Apple, followed by NVIDIA, followed by, like, Meta. Everything that was all over TV, that's what they had.
Yeah, that's, I mean, pretty...
We had a guy... First of all, he wanted to be in the protected program, but didn't want to sell any calls because the market was going straight up. I said, okay, so we'll be long an extra couple of puts. So say we had, 5,000 shares of Russell, and we bought 60 puts. Now the Russell's gone pretty much straight up since he's wanted to do that. So the Russell's up 15%, and we're up 9 or 8 because he's somewhere in there.
He even calls if you've up, been a bozo for 5 years straight.
Yeah, well, now, now
10 years straight.
He calls up and he says, why don't you get rid of all that? excuse me, all that stuff. You just go straight in on the spider.
Yeah, that's fine too.
Except for one thing. I don't have to remember the date because I can show you the date from the graph. The guy's market timing was so spectacular. I'm going to say that the day he did this was 219 when the stock was 612, and now it's 495. He had the exact top date.
Whoops.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can be a confused brains with a bull market.
Confuse brains with a bull market.
Yeah, I mean, you could have done that for 5 years in a row. You've been wrong for 10 years in a row, and on all the conviction or whatever, and you're still up, 200% or something. So, I would be scared.
You don't get to pick the date at which other people started.
Well, you don't start being a bozo just at the top. Not positive.
We started the protective program in 1997, like a long time ago, and from 1997 to 2007, we did better in the market. And we were never down. And the market was down 20%+ twice over that decade, and every single time we've had a market top, we've had a pretty large client leave because they didn't want to protect it anymore on the top. Every single time there's a market top.
Yeah, good on them.
Yeah, it's scary, isn't it?
They got better ideas.
Well, let me ask you this.
Wish them well.
Why today, with the market, now if what you say is correct.
Personally, I'm way more bearish than you guys. Maybe the only one who's more bearish than I am is Carl, but I'm not buying anything for a year or two.
I think you can, with this volatility, actually, I'm going to ask you a series of questions here in a minute. Here's a big one, though. Why, when the market, I'm looking at the spiders. When the spiders were six, explain me this, Lucy. This is the weirdest thing in all of, when the spider on 219, when the spiders were 613, say, the VIX, or the cost of insurance, was really low. It was like a 10 or 11, right? Got down that low?
Yeah. It was averaging 12 to 15, I'd say, from 2012 to.
And so now we're 496. Down. So we're down, 118 points. So that's 20%, a little over 20%. And the VIX is 48 almost.
Yeah, the VIX, for those who don't know what we're talking about, is a gauge on how far we think the market's going to move in a year. And normally people price the options right around 15 or 20%. How far can we move in a year, up or down? And right now, we're at 45% or 48%. And that means, in regular terms, that from here we could go up or down 45% in the next year, or at least that's what they're pricing the options.
Well, why in general, when the market's down, is the cost of insurance so much higher than when it's up?
Human
emotion. You would think it'd be just the opposite, wouldn't you?
You'd think so, but no. Human behavior dictates.
I know. Human behavior. No, I for one think the spiders are a much better buy at 496. And even if we keep going down, they're still a better buy here than they were at 613, aren't they?
Yeah.
So here's my question to you. As soon as we get Bill, I'll throw my. Here's my question to you. We have. Now, again, this is everybody's unique. I've always treated, our firm has always treated people unique. So I don't think we have any people with the exact same portfolio. Some people bring stuff in, some people like this, some people like that, somebody like this index, somebody like that index. We got a lot of people who love the healthcare. We got some people who hate the whole healthcare. I mean, so it's you can't point your finger and say, boy, look, we're kicking ass. I mean, I would, first of all, I can't do that.
We
and second of all,
ass.
I wouldn't do that. But I will say this: we have a real lot of people that have had the especially money that's transferred in, were probably 25 to 50% in T-bills for those people. And the rest of it is in indexes, and we've been puts the whole way. Now, obviously, if you've got the 600 put and the spider is 600 and it goes down $20, you don't make $20 on the put. So you're losing, but you're covered, and there's a limit on what you can lose, and you lose some percentage, which large percentage less than somebody else, but it's still not winning. Okay, so now we have people that have cash, people that have had put protection the whole way down. Now my question to you is
the whole way down.
Oh, the whole way down the last week.
Nice.
Okay, so my question to you is
big money.
At what level do I pick up the phone and say maybe we should cash in some of these T-bills, or at least next time we get the cash, not go back in T-bills and look about putting it in the market? At what level? I don't know we're there yet. The other point is the cost of the puts is so much, but now say the when the spiders were at 613, you know, we could go anywhere, right? Who knows, an earthquake could happen, an asteroid could hit New York. You want to protect yourself pretty much all the way down, especially if the person's older or not working. You could be 90 years old, be making a fortune, and your risk curve is different than somebody who's 65 retires, right?
Right.
Now here at 496, can we consider, for some people, again, everybody's different, maybe just insuring down to 450, 440, or we still got to go all the way? I don't know that. I'm tempted.
I mean, the market says you can kind of gauge, again, by like what you were talking about earlier, the VIX. So if we're down 20% from the top, and then from what the VIX says. So I'd imagine you just do 10 or 20% again. And
well, okay, so you're saying we could, instead of just buying the 495 puts, because we're at 496, we could buy the 495, 430 put spread.
Yeah. I mean, it all depends on the stomach.
Depends on the person.
Yeah, it depends. If you don't have the stomach for that, well, then you're not putting any new money in, and you're not touching anything, and you've been covered for a while, so that's good. But it depends on kind of your risk tolerance.
Well, it also depends on what I don't know that we're where we are. This is something unusual. This is such a self-inflicted wound. I've never seen us do this to ourselves before. But that's, you know, that, and then at some point, if we really think, now this is for a person who has a little more risk, if you really think you've hit bottom, then you maybe switch somebody to a covered strangle rate.
If they like it, yeah.
Yeah, if you really think you're down there and not much more to go, then you switch to that. There's all kinds of strategies here, but you know what? You know, you're my buddy, I can tell you, and you know my gang. How tiring do you think it is for me, for people to keep asking investment advice when they got their account at like Robinhood or someplace?
You know,
I'm getting over it, to be honest with you.
I salute and say good luck. I hope you do well.
Just a one finger salute, or what salute?
No, I don't always try to talk to the friends who call and ask about the insane option strategies that they're doing, but. Just try to consider the notional amounts. Consider your risk tolerance, meaning would you be able to sleep at night if this thing goes to zero, or your whatever option you've bought or sold? And then, you know, that's, can you live with it? If you're making if you're making money and you don't really care, then yeah, your risk tolerance is way higher. If you're playing with retirement money, you know, the you don't want to blow up your retirement account. So it's the question is, can you go to sleep at night? And if that question changes, then you got to make some adjustments.
Well, because right now, I mean, it's hard to insure yourself. It's high.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, where the hell did we close on? The spiders, we closed at 505. I think I look at the 505 puts for like a week, they're like 950. So if you bought those and it's down another $10, you made half a buck. That's not exactly insurance, is it?
I mean, buying or selling insurance. If you're going to have an issue, if you can't do it 20 or 30 times in a row, you're going to have a really, really big issue over the course of the long haul.
Well, size is an issue?
Yeah, that's the only issue, really. I mean, what we're talking about is just a variation of concentration.
This is very difficult stuff. I just went through, unbeknownst maybe to people, I just went through three or four strategies, all of which would take me, half hour strategy to explain it on a blackboard?
Yeah.
And I'm going to say that a lot of people are real comfortable places where if you call them and ask them what that is, they have no idea what they're talking about. And, I don't usually do this, but if somebody wanted me to manage their money like other people do, I'd bring you on as my guy.
That's not even the thing, like, when you talk about when they don't know what they're doing, there's people who do know what they're doing who do it like super leverage, too.
You think the Fisher Investments has any idea what a repair strategy is?
I doubt it. I mean, maybe there's a few people at the firm who are...
Oh, a few people, I'm sure, do.
Steering the ship, but, like, in terms of what to do, each person kind of... Would you be all right with this going to zero tomorrow? Whatever trade you've done, you know, you wouldn't feel good, but could your portfolio take it? Would you still be kind of okay? Could you do it 50 times in a row? Like, if you can't do it 50 times in a row, then your portfolio is going to have a pretty big problem over the course of, you know, call it 10 years.
If you and I were going to do the brainless stuff, give me your money, I'll put it in the market, and I'll never look at it, never talk to you, I think we would do that for what? They charge a percent and a half. We'd do it for half of that, wouldn't
we? That would be more of like the 60-40 or the and just keep cash on the side and buy when it goes down, and that's it. Strategies at all.
Well, the one thing that is interesting here, Greg, is we've been doing it this last week, and by the way, we haven't made any money on it. Because we've come down so fast and the volatility is so high, the VIX, implied volatility is so high, we've been able to put repair strategies on it for next to nothing.
Yeah.
So if it did snap back, we did some like $5 and $6 apart strikes on Friday for today. Now obviously we're down, you know, we're not going to make any money on them, but I think we only paid a dime for them or something. I mean, to be able to have something to the upside here at this volatility level, it's pretty inexpensive.
Yeah.
But
there's a lot of fear.
Who would you trust to do that at Merrill Lynch?
I don't know, and I worked for Merrill Lynch.
Yeah.
And they're no longer in business.
Yeah, it's a... So, okay, what about futures here?
Yeah, futures. This is kind of our wheelhouse. When things fly around like this and volatility is 40 or 50%, you know, we're used to that. So looking around, what we're kind of focused on now is the crack spread in the oil and the crush spread in the beans.
Well, you were mentioning Friday night, the crack spread in the oil is all goofy. Why is that?
Well,
first of all, explain what it is.
You have crude oil. You need to turn it into products. Call it RBOB and heating oil. And what happens?
And you get some other little crap in there.
Yeah, and you need to convert it into stuff that we can use for energy. And because it seems, at least now, at a, you know, in a daily time frame, that those products are moving before, more specifically, the heating oil is leading the way now, which is kind of interesting considering in this time of year gas usually does. So I'm kind of trailing that and following it around.
How much of that is adjustable?
Adjustable?
Yeah.
I mean
you can
go out.
You can mess with the
6 months.
What I'm saying is, if a 42-gallon barrel of crude oil, which, by the way, if you didn't know that, a barrel is 42 gallons, get you 19 to 20 gallons of motor fuel, and it gets you about 11 to 13 gallons of distillate, which is diesel or heating oil. Then you get a bunch of other crap, jet fuel, asphalt, heavy fuel oil, that kind of thing. You can monkey with that a hair, can't you? I mean, you could, if you want more, if gas is selling relatively higher, can't you get another gallon or two of gas if you mess with the crack or the cracking in the tower.
Yeah,
a little bit, but not. You can't get that much more, can you?
In the U.S., we have a certain type of crude that we get from Canada that we refine most of, but you turn it into the products you want. Call it 2/3 of a barrel of gas and 1/3 of a barrel of diesel, and then you sell those two products, and whatever you paid for, you'll get your money back from whatever you paid for the crude oil. Mostly you do 3-2-1, meaning 3 barrels of crude equals 2 barrels of gas and 1 barrel of diesel. But
not exactly.
Not exactly.
But close.
But close, yeah.
Now why would one... You know, let's go to break, because we've got too much stuff to talk about on break. We can't go without break with all the world doing what it's doing, so let's go on break, and then we'll come back and pick this up, because it's pretty interesting.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures down 104. We just rallied up to only down 88. Now we came flying back down 15 points again. Did you see anything about that, Greg? I did not. Same thing with the NASDAQ. It was down 411. Didn't it get almost down only 300? Now it's going back the other way. Dow Futures about 700. Dow Futures were down 2,000 when they opened last night, so we are still back quite a bit. But something happened in the last couple of minutes where the upswing is turned down. Who knows how that's going to last. Now Europe... These guys, the DAX down 830, that's a full 4%. FTSE down 301, that's 3.7%. These guys, I don't think, have come back much. CAC around down 302, that's 4%. So these are big moves. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 2,600, that's almost 8%. That's about as big as move I think I've ever seen, Greg. It can't be the biggest one ever, but boy, it's been a while. Hang Seng down 3,000, that's 13%. 13%, wow. Shanghai down 245, that's 7%. Friday, more bad news. The Dow was down 2,200. The S&P was down 322. NASDAQ down 962. So we're nowhere like that yet. We're down maybe a third of that in the SPOOs and maybe half of that in the NASDAQ. NASDAQ's been getting obliterated. We've got oil down $1.44. It was under 60 last night, wasn't it, Craig? I got it at 60.55. Brent down 142, 64.16. Natural gas down 2 cents, 381. RBOB down 3 cents, 202, as Greg's been talking about. Gold, we're actually up $24 this morning. We're back 3,060. Silver up $1.23, 30.46. Copper down 3 cents to 4.36. But one of the different news this morning, we've got the dollars back to, the euro's back to 109, so the dollar's gone down some. British pound 128. So the dollar was stronger. Now it's coming down. The euro is... Euro gains as a safe haven? I'm not so sure I've ever heard of that before. Crypto was down 5,000 earlier. Now it's only down 2,600, but it's starting to feel the brunt of this a little bit. 76,800, but still, it has hung up there better in the market. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports? That's a lot of crap, isn't it?
Wow. Yeah. Morning, everyone. We got 41 degrees here in Chicago. Let's see. High of 42. It's cloudy today. Phoenix, 58 right now. High of 88 today. Sunny and warm. Traffic, not terrible. We've got 20 minutes from Montrose. Got 41 minutes inbound Edens from Lake Cook, 28 minutes from Wolf, and let's see, Stevenson is 21 minutes from 294 to the Ryan. Sports, Bulls 131, Hornets 117. Ovechkin in the NHL finally passed Wayne Gretzky. That was like a 10-minute celebration in that game. And the NCAA tournaments. Men's, Florida beat Auburn. That was 79-73. Houston beat Duke. That was 70-67. We got the championship tonight, and that is at 7:50. So Florida, Houston tonight, 7:50 p.m. In the Alamo Dome again. That's all I got, guys.
Do we have John?
John, good morning.
How are you, bud?
I'm fine. How about you?
Doing all right, except wondering how much clients are going to get nicked this morning, which isn't good. Although it's not as bad as it was when we opened, that's for sure. We have Bill.
Yeah.
Hey, Bill, how are you?
Doing great, Tom. I'm fascinated by your discussion here about all these markets. And I heard Jim Cramer last night say the S&P was going to 4,000. I don't know if you'd agree with that.
He's the guy who's been bullish forever. It's, we're at 49.83. Let's just say 4,000 would be one hell of a wake-up call. It's another 20%. That's a lot. That puts people – where does that put them, Greg? How many years ago in their valuation of their 401k? Three, four? That's halfway back through COVID, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be I can tell you the last time. I'll get back to you.
That would be bad. Before we go too far, I have a question. And John, you're our attorney mun here. We had a little conversation with Bill last week regarding, has he ever been involved in a project that was, once you got allegedly the approval from government or whoever, that you would the thing would get canceled, and pretty much the answer was no. You've never had it something stopped in the middle, okay? So, but now didn't get much press, but on Thursday I heard that whoever gives money to libraries across the country, it's halfway through the fiscal year, and they've been told they're not getting the second half of the year stuff. So have you ever heard anything like that? I have not. I mean, I would have thought you'd said next year, you got to come reapply or something because we're not sure we want to give you so much. I never heard of people getting cut off mid-year. I mean, you said it's never happened in your industry, but it sure seems like it's happened in other places here.
Well, I could see how it could happen in, for example, libraries, which are supposedly supported by local tax revenue. At least that's what my tax bill says here. But as far as whatever allocations are made for projects like that, literacy projects or whatever, I got to believe that it's not unheard of for stuff to either get withdrawn or downsized or something.
Well, there were certain specific things in there, Jen, and I didn't understand them. It was certain specific things. I mean, you're right. Most of the library funding comes from local. But there was certain specific projects, whether it was upgrading, whether it was internet, whatever it was, that the federal government was pretty much helping all across the board. Now, if it's an internet install, what happens if you're halfway done? You stop it and just waste the first part? I'm not... So I was hoping maybe one of you guys knew more about this than me because I couldn't find it. It was first a couple of specific projects. It wasn't for the library itself. It was sort of like the federal government has a deal for schools. They don't really fund the schools, but they might fund books or something for everybody or some crap, because they really don't get involved in the whole mess. But there's
been a lot of mission creep about libraries, just to take that as an example, Tom. I mean, I look at the way they've been put up in Chicago recently, these absolutely god-awful monstrosities. They're the ugliest buildings in the zip code, practically, wherever they put them up. And they're really, designed as social service centers. They're not libraries. I mean, there are some books in there and computer terminals, and, you can check books out and bring them back. But their focus has really been on what kids, who don't have access to after-school programs should be doing after school hours. So they've got this set up to house those people. They're quasi-homeless shelters, from what I can see.
Well, so I used to see the ones on the south side are the same ones I've ever seen. I don't see any new ones there. Also, the Walker branch is still there, let's put it that way. Bill, you went to the Walker branch, I'm sure, right?
Well, that was my library. It was 111th Street, and I lived at 96th Street. It was quite a ways, you know. But it's not. I mean, there's another one now on 95th Street, the old Lincoln Funeral Home,
really,
which is the library for my district. But and it has been that way for about 40 years.
But well, the Mount Greenwood Library. They must have thought people in Mount Greenwood were dumb. There was never any books in there.
Well, the Walker branch was tiny. It was like a little, you know, stone house or something.
Yeah, it's yellow. It's a little yellow brick thing on the top of the hill. It hasn't gotten any bigger. I just rode by it last week. I'm like, God, that place looks the same.
It's like a museum that's masquerading as a library.
Oh, I know. It's, by the way, for those that don't know, we all came from kind of the same neighbor. You were three blocks away from there, right, Bill?
111th and Maplewood.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was my library. I used to check out books there all the time, and it is a beautiful building.
Well, that's where you used to have to go if you wanted to see an assignment in high school, you wanted to see the encyclopedia, you had to trundle up there because nobody had one at home.
It was the only place that had a photocopying machine that I knew of.
God. All right, Bill, so you're on to talk. Let's shove this bad news for a second, John. Let's talk a little bit about basketball and sport. Well, I don't even know where to start with this, but the teams look like they're like almost like pro teams, these teams that are out there. They're awful good. I don't see anybody in Notre Dame's team starting in any of these Final Four. Maybe Burton gets some time, but other than that, nobody. I mean, how stratified has this become? It seems like it's pretty stratified to me.
I think that's a good way to put it, Tom. These are both loaded rosters, but they play opposite types of basketball. You know, Florida is one of the highest scoring teams in the country, and University of Houston is one of the best defensive teams. So I expect you'll see a battle. Could Florida score over 70 points, I think, is their challenge against a great defense. And they've only been held under 70 one time this year. And can Houston get some of the three-point shooting that they did so successfully against Duke? So Florida's favored in the game.
Really?
I would call this they're favored by 1.5. But remember, this is really a home court game for the Houston Cougars. All of their students, all of their fans have a 3-hour drive where Gainesville, Florida, that's an airplane flight. So both teams were losing at halftime in the semis and made comebacks. Obviously, Houston's was the best one. So I think it's going to be a battle of wills. Can Florida get it up and down the court ahead of Houston's defense before it sets up? Or will Houston smother them, hold them down, and win the game on their terms?
Well, I have to root for Florida because evidently the son I never knew I had is on that team. He's got my same name.
I think that's a good... But, you know, Florida has won the NCAA twice when Billy Donovan was there, Bulls coach.
So was the Bulls center, right? What was his name? Joakim Noah was on that team, wasn't he?
He was. And they had some other pro-type players on that team. Houston has been to the final game twice and lost both times. Of course, one of those teams was the Phi Slamma Jamma group in the 80s, and I think it'll be a good basketball game tonight, and we'll see. May the best team win.
Did I, you and Jan know what I'm talking about here? You ever tell you my story about the Phi Slamma Jamma? Back when I was trading in the 80s on the floor, and you know, guys on the floor had money, right? They had one of those Calcuttas over at Beverly Country Club. And I had never been to one, so I went. And, boy, talk about serious crap. These guys were... For those who don't know what a Calcutta is, there's a... However many teams are in there. You can do it for golf. We used to do it for our golf teams, and we went for a golf weekend from the floor.
Sounds like you guys had a gambling problem.
sort of. A lot of guys did. But the Calcutta is... Say there's 64 teams, which there are, right? Well, if the winner gets every game, there's a percentage. So if you win the first round, what is it, Bill? Like 1.25% or something. Second round, you might get 2%, and it works its way up to where, you know, if you win, you probably get 30% of the pool or 25%. And online, these numbers are probably available, but you know, right where your percentage is. So the minute somebody makes a bid on one of the teams, you immediately know, almost, if you're a trader, you immediately know like what the final purse is going to be. Because, okay, if that team's worth that, then everybody else relatively is worth everything else, right? It's sort of like we used to have our golf teams. They'd pick the golf teams. The minute somebody's bid $2,000 on one of the teams, then you knew Bill's team was worth $3,000. You know what I'm saying? Because it becomes all relative after you see the first bid. The only comeback was if you bid on a team, like I bought Maryland or somebody, they were crap, for like $500. That was a small change compared to the guys in this room. But now if it got so big, they would come back and redo the first round. So if somebody said, all right, we didn't think the purse was going to be this big, Maryland, even though they're crap, is now worth $1,000, and the off chance they might win, then you could rebid the first round, but I'd get 20% of the rebid. So if it went for $1,000, I'd end up with $100 for doing nothing, because my team got stolen from me. Anyway, Vice Lemon Jamma was in there with such heavy favorites. A team headed by Lee Tenzer and some guys, I think they paid $60,000 cash for Five Slamma Jamma. And they had to go to the finals. They had to win the semifinals to get ahead. And didn't they almost lose the first game by like 2 points? These guys would have been out like 60 large. You guys both know that the. Well, you might say, why Beverly Country Club? Well, where the building is, and Bill got his Evans Scholars from Beverly, that's unincorporated Cook County. You guys know that. The other part across the street is Chicago. The nine holes where the building is unincorporated.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
You know that? You knew that, didn't you, Bill?
Yeah.
So you can have, I don't know if they do them anymore, but you could have one of these things there, and you don't have to worry about getting raided.
Yeah, they used to do their fair bit of gambling there. I don't know so much about what went on in the clubhouse, but those kind of Calcutta golf tournaments were, there would be big people, and many of them from the trading floors.
Yeah,
would come in there and have a big time.
Well, they're a lot of fun because you got to use your head. I mean, if the Moriarty team, Bill's name is Bill Moriarty. If you're twice as good as the Flanagan team, the minute the Flanagan team goes up for $2,000, yours is worth $4,000. Because everything is relative once the first number comes in, which is interesting. I mean, you got to have a quick mind to do this because you don't want, that's the whole point of the Calcutta. The money evens it up, not the draft. Anyway, so you think
usually a bit of drinking involved, made that kind of a dicey scenario.
Well, when you're talking about 50 or 60 grand in green, the drinking kind of takes a second. Hope you're not too plastered to doing that. So what? The question for the both of you guys: where is this basketball going? I don't know if you're probably not keeping track of the women's girls team. They're down to one starter. They've had 4 or 5 people leave. And and people are not supposed to get tampered with, but. They sort of are. And then you see this guy who's the big, I think he's one of the big stars, the guy with the jet black hair. He's the guy who came from Iona. You know what I'm talking about?
Walter Clayton.
Yeah, he was playing under Patino was in Iona.
Patino in Iona, right.
During his pennant years.
Yeah.
And so
he got tampered with. So, he didn't just find himself in Gainesville, Florida.
Well, but he could have gone because Patino left. He got an out, right? Because the coach left.
So probably he had an out no matter what. You know, he probably had a small NIL deal there at Iona, which was not, you know, a lot of money. But, you know, all of those guys are cut free at the end of the year. They can do whatever they want. They can enter the portal and transfer to wherever they want to.
Well, you used to be able to get an out if the coach left, right?
Yeah, That I believe that's true, and but you're seeing rosters. I mean, the turnover nowadays, I think at St. John's this past year, Patino replaced 11 of the 12 guys.
Why did this guy go to Patino? You know, Florida came up with more money.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that would be the logical thing, or and maybe a little better schedule, a little better TV. But you know, clearly a good move by this Clayton. I mean, he certainly established himself as a star college player, get himself draft consideration, and the real money where you play next year. Well, who, who's it's the kind guy of who's... astounding that even guys that you don't think are that great, the money they're getting in their rookie contracts is, you know, pretty significant.
Who's the guy that was in, this is his second Final Four in two different teams?
Yeah, I forget that guy. He was with Baylor.
No, he was on one. He was on one of the teams Saturday, the afternoon game.
Yeah, I can't remember, but there is a guy. I think he's still in the tournament, so he may have a chance to win an NCAA in two different uniforms, and I don't think that's ever happened.
What now, Jan? You're pretty good at like writing copy for people. If it's always, this is not a sexist shot, but it's always the human interest person is always seems to be a lady, be it baseball, basketball, or whatever. And they were talking about this guy coming from Iona, and you know how he could have gone to St. John's, but he didn't, so he came to Florida. Wouldn't you think, even if it's a lie, wouldn't you add something there about his marketing degree, or his degree was in marketing in Iona, and everybody knows Florida's got the greatest marketing program, so that's why he's in Florida. Even if it's a flat-ass lie, don't you put something like that, can't you lob something like that in just to make people feel good?
Well, just put it in the contract, you know. Here, say this. You know.
Say, I mean... Is there? Do these guys ever even see a class? Does the NCAA? I mean, it doesn't sound like.
Would anybody at the NCAA care if they did? You know, I don't know.
Well, you have to make progress of some kind. I can't imagine them coming down on one of these teams saying, "None of these guys went to school now." Do you?
No. I mean, you know, I have just kind of glancing interest in college basketball anymore, but from what I see of it, I check out some of the televised games. But the crowds that the women draw are just, they're not there. And
they're starting for a few schools. They're gaining.
I mean, they're gaining, but I wonder if that's just a plug-in because, the viewership generally or the attendance generally is declining. And they're seeking to bolster their audience some way by going after a different demographic. But I just see,
The Florida guard is Elijah Martin. Elijah Martin transferred to Florida after 4 years, transferred to Florida after Florida Atlantic in 4 years, where he was part of the 2023 Final Four run.
Okay.
Yeah. Elijah Martin.
Thank you. So, yeah, Johnny, I mean, I guess I'm trying to get here is what's happening to the market. If there is a theme to the show, which some of you guys could probably even think that there is, it has to do with everything kind of depends on everything else. And I like talking about the combinations between two stories and not read one story and believe it doesn't affect the other one. What if we have a recession, which I don't want? I mean, I think we're in one now, but I don't want one any worse. But how is this going to affect this seemingly incredible cachet of money there's not enough into sports? I mean, if we're talking if Bill's, the guy Bill was quoting is right, in 2 weeks from now we're looking at a 4,000 S&P, you can't tell me it's not going to affect these colleges. I mean, somehow, some way, it has to. And the question is, how much?
I think it already has in attendance figures, and I think the colleges, from what I mean, there's some that are getting harder to get into. Notre Dame, I think, is harder this year than it was last year, from what my niece tells me. But overall, I think they're going to be hunting for students before they're through, let alone student athletes. And that will probably become very aggressive just to keep those programs afloat. You got to get some stars in there to get people to watch. But I just see the college experience as having been degraded so much, and the job situation is key here. If there is a recession in college, there is a recession. Just how bad it's going to be, I'm with you on that. But I do think that the gloss is going to be off college as we've known it for the last 20 or 30 years or so, where the tuition hikes just keep coming and coming, and the quality of the education is just falling off a cliff. So I don't see that, surviving once people kind of get their head around this, and they'll be doing stuff in preference to, going to college, like getting some sort of a sustaining job where they can live on it, because it's going to be really hard to find a job that's going to pay for college so that people can walk away with, you know, the ability to start out in life and get a family started and a house.
You're starting to see, even in Illinois, you know, Pritzker talking about a four-year degree out of some of these community colleges.
Right. That to me is, you know, U of I was telling people, and they're probably still telling, you know, parents now, when, you know, Johnny or Susie comes to register as a freshman, you better count on it taking 5 years to get them through this program, because that's just the way the programs are structured. You can't get all your credits in 4 years. Well, what kind of a racket is that? I mean, if it were an architecture program like we remember, I could see that, because that's pretty specialized training, and you need 5 years to cover it all, but not for a business degree. Or
Bill, were there any five-year programs at Marquette? My cousin had a five-year program at Ohio State in aerospace engineering, which I guess I can understand. Notre Dame's only one was in architecture. Did Marquette have any?
I can't remember, but, you know, one of the things in the engineering college that was encouraged and I thought was a great thing was when they would you would take a semester and go work for an engineering firm, and it was extremely valuable to go into the private sector and sort of apply some of that theoretical knowledge to actual work. And I think that's what made your tenure at college more than 4 years, because you would be missing for maybe one semester. That's exactly what happened with me. I had to come back for one semester when I theoretically, all my classmates were already graduated. But, you know, at the engineering college, we had a lot more hours, I thought, in terms of just the number of hours you had to accomplish. And it seemed to me like whatever credits we took in other colleges, like if we took something in the business school, it was always, you know, the advanced economics, the blah, blah, blah. So they weren't making it too easy. But I think for people in technical areas, for you to get some experience working, it can guide the rest of your college career. So you can, you know, you really try to say, boy, I need to learn this stuff because I've seen how it applies.
Did you get any credit for the stuff you did during your summers? You were a rodman on a surveying team or something, weren't you?
I was a surveyor and did other things. You don't get any, I don't remember getting any hours for that, but I got, you know, like the College of Engineering approved it. And, you know, you had to go, in other words, if you took a semester off to work at McDonald's, they wouldn't agree with that. They wouldn't support that. But if you were going to take off and work in an engineering firm and some kind of technical application, they would support you and put it in your file, that sort of thing. But you didn't get any college credit for it that I knew of.
Remember,
did they offer you a stipend or anything, Bill, or did you get any financial reimbursement or anything?
Well, the reimbursement was the engineering company pay you, I want to say it was like, you know, $500 a month or something, and usually pretty the things I got to do, like Tom reminded me of, working on a surveying crew and things like that, or some god awful jobs, and so you got paid a salary for working, and if they sent you out of town, which they did in my case one time, you know, they pay your motel bill and a little bit of money for food, but it wasn't a luxurious thing, but it was invaluable to me.
Oh yeah,
when I finally got out of school, you could go to work for somebody, be immediately impactful, you know, whereas if you were just a kid that had college credits and walked in, you would be wandering the halls for 6 months before you could really produce.
Yeah. Remember at Marist, how we had Marist High School, Bill and I both went to Marist, John went to Mount Carmel. We had the guy came from, was it Fenger that became Olive Harvey? And we had the couple of college level courses we could take. I don't know if you remember that or not.
I do, and I use those those college credits to graduate. So yeah, I remember that quite well.
Well,
yeah, I did too.
My nephews now leave high school, and they walk in the front door of a college with 36 college credits, wow, which is like they've already finished a year in high school.
Well, my freshman year at Notre Dame, I think you were probably there, but I hurt my ankle at St. Bernadette's Quonset Hut, and I was off for 2 weeks. Had torn ligaments, and so I go back. The only time I ever saw a counselor in 4 years, I might have seen one more. And the guy says to me, "Gee, you've been doing pretty good, blah blah blah." And I go, "Yeah." I said, "You know, I got these couple of courses from Marist that were supposed to count to give me credit." He goes, "I gave you a lot of credit for taking those, but don't think you're taking anything less here. But I'll give you credit. Good job." So I figured I better stay away from these counselors. I ended up a loser on this meeting. I'm like, God. But Bill, so what Notre Dame, I get the feeling, is, Jan, critique me, is all in on football when it comes to this money, NIL and other, payoff, salary, whatever you want to call it. Because I've identified, what, Jan, 4 or 5 different levels of this stuff. And I don't think they have the stomach for it for basketball. I don't think they have the stomach for it for girls' basketball. That's probably why the whole team left. Well, not the whole team. Kevin's going to tell me it's not the whole team. But they've had people – they've had a lot of exits through the portal, and maybe they'll have people come in through the portal. Who knows? But where do you put Marquette here? I don't think – I mean, a couple of my best friends from my hood are – they're older than us, but they're Marquette through and through. I mean, they're Marquette sweatshirts on all the time, and the one guy went there to play football. Bill, how long ago was that? And he ended up, the team got bounced, so he ended up boxing, and he kept his scholarship. He thinks the letters are going on. I can't conceive of Marquette competing with Florida on the basketball level. Just not even in terms of the money part, but taking anybody and somehow making them out to be a student and all that stuff. I don't see their heart in it. I really don't. I know they want a good team. I don't see the Irish heart. I mean, I think they'll stick with the football for a while. I don't know how long. If that gets crazy, where they actually will sponsor a professional team with an NDN, once it becomes, where do you think these schools are on it? Well, Jan, why don't you answer first? Where do you think the Irish are on this?
I think they've been approaching a tipping point, Tom, because they clearly, you know, have had decent program for the last couple of years, and an improving one, and you know, a good coach who's a good delegate for the school. And you know, lots of student enthusiasm and lots of alumni enthusiasm, but that's, I think, pretty unusual these days at that level. I mean, I can think of a lot of schools that have just sort of drifted in their athletics, and there's a lot at stake. I mean, because I think that, you know, the gambling interest has really changed things. It's made it less of a team sport following, as it is with the professional players too, and fantasy football is, you know, kind of detached from.
What do you think of what do you think of the commercials? The NCAA, don't get mad at the players.
Yeah, well, or you know, if you're in a fantasy pool of some kind, you know, don't get too personal about it. I just see this as it's a hard thing to make pay if, unless you've got a huge investment already in it from, you know. You know, a legacy of, you know, like Notre Dame's football program of decades and decades of this, and you know, it's just, it's central to the school's growth and reputation. But you know, I don't see that easily transferring to women's sports in college programs. I don't see that likely to happen for a school that doesn't already have a kind of, you know, visibility. And as a result, you've got, you know, television dictating a lot of the stuff, certainly the revenue sharing for it. But I kind of feel that this is not a growth market right now. And I think even Notre Dame must wonder, what are we trying to do here? We've said this on the program many times, Tom. I don't know how they keep their missions straight. You know, at some level, you've got, you know, shifting going on where you feel like you've gone too far in one direction. Notre Dame has tried to improve themselves academically, and I think they've succeeded, but I don't think they could do it together with the kind of sports programs that people are used to.
Bill, where does that leave Marquette in the Big East? Big East had 11 teams in the NCAA in 2011. This year, they would have two?
They have five.
Five? Okay.
Well, I think Shaka Smart, who's been coaching there now for 4 years, and remember, he came from the University of Texas, but that was before NIL. He does not take people off of the portal in general. You know, his statement to the world is, I'm going to recruit high school guys, I'm going to develop them. Not to say he doesn't have any NIL money, and I think if you were to be recruited by Marquette and turned into a star, you would get NIL money that would be comparable. But he's so far unwilling to play the game of going after that significant player from another school. And again, he's done pretty well. I think people are quite happy with them, and he's got good kids in the school. You know, some of the players are real good academically, but they're not going to be able to compete at the highest level unless he gets really lucky with somebody, you know, like back in the days when they recruited Dwayne Wade. Well, Dwayne Wade wasn't very well known as a high school player from Chicago, but he developed a lot and turned into, you know, obviously what he became. And they were able to get to the Final Four that year. So I think Shaka is pretty dedicated to his thinking that I'm not going to be chasing guys to displace guys that I'm already going to develop, and I'm just going to do it my way. And but we'll see. I mean, I see no indication of him changing that, you know, where he's announcing new recruits coming in off the portal. So I think for better or for worse, he's got his system.
What do you think? Who's going to be the first to change the contract? So he goes and gets a Dwayne Wade, he or Notre Dame or anybody. Now you're going to get, you know, I don't know how much it cost to recruit him out of Chicago. It wasn't like he was flying private jets back and forth. And who knows, maybe he was. Well, he probably wasn't in those days. And it's got to cost, you know, I wouldn't know. How much does a ride to private jet cost? $5,000? $3,000? I mean, it's got to cost more than a first-class ticket anyway. So what's the cost of recruiting somebody? Even Marquette, I say even Marquette, all in, your tuition's got to be $60,000. So 2 years into it, you've got 120 plus, say, 50. You're pushing $200,000 for this guy. And all of a sudden he says, well, now that I'm good, I'm out. And you go, okay, well, I've been paying for the lunches, for the weight training, for the all the other stuff, for the personal trainer and everything for 2 years. I want some money back. Who's going to be the first to say that?
I don't think anyone's going to say that.
Okay, I'll let you expound on that in a second, but, you know, as you know, unfortunately, I come at this stuff like purely money, all right? And purely money is, you know, people end up becoming a slave to it. But once you do that, you can't become half a gangster, Bill. You know, the team from, you know, there's a team in Crestwood, baseball, and those guys hold tryouts all the time, and they get people. Once in a while, I go to a game. And once in a while, somebody gets taken by a big league team. I think the big league team has to pay the guy for that guy. I mean, it's not a fortune, but he gets compensated for the recruitment, the 6 weeks of coaching and all the tryouts. I don't think it comes for free. Why should Marquette become a feeder school for friggin' Florida for nothing?
I think those are, you know, I think there's going to be a reckoning at some point, because you're hearing enough people talk about it where this system where we have now, where a player emerges and he's immediately poached by a bigger school, and we're just seeing that left and right, and I would think the coaches and administrators would say, we've got to bring some order to this this frontier, because it's just kind of crazy that you could have a roster and then the next year 11 out of 12 guys are gone. It's just not sustainable, in my opinion.
All right, hey, let's since we have this market still doing this, we're down 143 in the spoos. We came back to less than 100. Now we're going the other way again. NASDAQ's down over 3%. You guys don't do this every day like me. We've seen a shock in the world, you know, without getting into the politics of it. We see some stuff happening to, you know, I'll just kind of tell you where I am on this stuff. Part of it, I think, is the tariff number. Part of it is, you know, I both of you guys know me long enough. I don't lie to people, and I don't like being lied to. What did John Wayne say in The Shootist? I don't put hands on other people, and I don't let them put hands on me. I mean, it doesn't make me violent. I just don't want to see it happen. And I couldn't believe last week when this reciprocal tariff thing came out, the left column had a bunch of fine print under it you couldn't even see on TV. And it basically says, tariffs charged to the USA, including currency manipulation and trade barriers. Now, to me, right away, that should be three columns, right? Not one. It should include the tariffs charged, whatever your estimate of the trade barriers are, and whatever your estimate of the currency manipulation is. So somebody can get some level of detail out of this. Well, and I've got Vietnam here at 90%. Yet if I look up 90% or Vietnam, it says in a bunch of other places, and who knows if they're right or not, that their tariffs are 9.4%, not 90. You know, there's a spread. So I've talked to probably 10 people this weekend and asked them, what's the number for Vietnam? And every one of them said 90. And I said, did you read what else is in the column? What? All it says is tariff. No, it doesn't. So anyway, this is going on. So, and we have a market reaction. First of all, are we down to a point where I should be getting some of my T-bill money back from my clients and thinking about putting in the market? Are we not there yet? Should I be insuring it all the way here, or backing up on the insurance a little bit, maybe with a spread and just going straight? There's like 4 points here that, you know, if you catch them right, you can do really well for people. But how much of this is the tariff, or the fact that it seems maybe not at all? Tell me that. It's so half-assed and seat of the pants. I mean, more and more people, I've read like 5 articles now saying, where the hell are they getting the 50% tariff in South Korea? It isn't there. I've got Switzerland here with 61%. Switzerland has not had a tariff on exported industrial goods in 2 years. How do you go from 0 to 61? I mean, how much of it is people showing off some half-assed calculations, or is it the tariffs themselves? People understand it. Is it the people coming back and fighting from the other side? What? I don't care who goes first, but what are you making of this?
I think some of it is, you know, is a lot of it is posturing, and you know, shock value. However, you can put a dollar amount on any of that, but the messaging that's also kind of being exposed around, you know, the last week or so, Tom, is really interesting to me. You've got Starmer, you know, in Great Britain, coming out today saying globalization is, you know, history, pretty much. I can't believe he would say that and not be struck dead, because somebody would be out to get him for having, you know, turned his back on his supporters. But a bigger messaging problem, I think, is with China right now. And some of the stuff I've been looking at, where the population estimates are so ridiculously overstated that I think they can no longer keep up the charade that they're to be taken as seriously as a market or as, you know, a trading partner or anything else, because the people just aren't there anymore. I saw some projections, you know, since, you know, the last 4 years of COVID policies, that their population is now less than ours. We're talking like 315 million or something.
I read years ago that by the end of this century, ours would be higher than theirs. India's got to be way ahead of them.
Probably been going that direction for the last 15 years, but you would never have the Chinese in a position to say that, because it's bad for business. But I think that might be one of the things that's kind of got, you know, Trump emboldened here to, you know, even go after countries he doesn't have to, just as a show of force.
But what's the point? Going after a country that never did anything to us?
Well, it isn't, you know, that he's looking for, you know, maybe necessarily a big change in policy, trade policy with that country, but it's about shooting his mouth off. And I think Peter Navarro denies that this is, you know, just a rhetorical exercise, and I think he has to say that. And you know, their messaging is getting a little confused now with Elon Musk weighing in against Navarro. So I don't know where that.
He said he was an idiot because he came from Harvard.
He never built anything, and you know that I can see. You know, maybe that's good for everybody's image to make it look like that there isn't completely unified, you know, speaking on this, on these issues. But I think it's a power play, as it's always been with Trump, in any business deal. And this is something we're not used to having presidents as such do.
Well, we're not used to having a president who's essentially a New York, whatever we want to call him.
Right. And yet, at some level, I think business expertise and, a smart money person was always kind of in the back of the mind of the founders of this country, because you didn't have some, former actor or some, hotshot nothing in there, blowing off steam all the time, didn't know what he or she was talking about. So this is, I'm not saying that Trump is, so brilliant that you can't criticize what he's doing, but he's brought something else to the job of president that we don't have any kind of playbook for, and nor does any other country. So
one thing I found interesting, and Tom, your discussion earlier this morning, I think you guys bring a lot of light on this whole thing, because obviously you're an expert in this subject and people like me are just watching. But if I understood this correctly, on one of the Sunday morning news shows, they identified there was an island somewhere that had no people, produced no products. As a matter of fact, the one thing it did have was some number of penguins. And they had put tariffs on this island of penguins.
Bill, you're a man like you should realize penguins are liberal.
But anyways, I want to say that Jake Tapper was questioning the Department of Commerce lady, who, of course, is, kind of obviously a Trump supporter, and kind of asking her this question. And you could see her eyes just, she wasn't real ready for it. But I think that speaks to a very sloppy production here, where we're saying things are 90% when they're really 9%, and all of this stuff, and it's just I think it's going to be incredibly damaging. I think this is going to go on for a while. I think you've got 2 months of this where we're going to go back and forth, and then at some point Trump caves, because he'll have wreaked so much havoc to the economy. And but I'd say everybody, from what I can see, hold on tight. It's going to be tough.
What do you think we? First of all, if either one of you guys and Greg get in here, where is Lesotho? That's a country.
Lesotho? That's Africa, isn't it?
99% is their tariff to us. I can't believe they can manipulate their currency. What in the hell do these guys do to us? What did Wayne say on Thursday? They Liechtenstein. We got them at 73%. I thought they just had a bunch of banks. Evidently, they export artificial teeth, dentures. How did that, some of this stuff is bizarre world, isn't it? Fiji.
Well, 63%. Yeah. Nobody knows how bizarre it is.
But who's the idiot that put the 73% on? How do you accuse Switzerland of currency manipulation when the thing is freely traded? How many people would you say, Bill, you're down in Austin, are convinced that a tariff on Chinese goods is paid by China?
No one.
You think they think it's all paid here?
Yeah.
I know. I see a lot of people that say, what are you talking about? China pays it. Trump said it last week. They're paying for it. He was on the plane the other night. That's that he thinks that China's going to pay. He thinks they're going to lower their prices enough to I don't know if he thought that through. He thinks they're going to lower their prices enough to where they, in essence, eat the tariff. I don't know if I see that. A little of that's going to happen, probably. But
I don't think that's happening.
Did you? I don't know if you were listening the other day, Bill. I don't want to go through it again and again, but I did a final exam paper on tariffs on one car, a Mercedes coming over fully assembled. It's really hard to go through the detail for one item. Now, Kevin mentioned this weekend we're talking that Ford has already reacted by saying you can have employee price on new Fords. So they're essentially trying to tell you that they're leading the pack in lowering prices here as a way to compete and use it to steal gain market share. Enforce that would be, but I don't know that you know, that you're the Cadillac dealership is licking their chops on the or the Buick guys that are made here are licking their chops on the Toyota tariffs. I mean, why they probably, why would they not raise their price up a little bit? Their competitor just did, right? You never know how it's going to land. And that was my actually was my A paper, is that, you know, I went through about 15 different iterations of it, and it's one product, one place, coming in fully assembled. The complexity now with half the stuff being made here and parts going back and forth, I couldn't begin to write that paper now, and I'm pretty good at it. And I don't know how the hell these guys think they got it all figured out, or they are just, I don't know, do you, Johnny, you think they're just winging it out there and hoping it lands right, or what?
Yeah, well, at some level, yeah. I mean, it's always been in tariff policy to affect consumption patterns. It's to an extent you can, that, you know, there's substitutable goods that are equivalent in the consumer's eyes, where I don't have to pay full freight for car X, and I'll settle for car Y, just because it's prohibited to buy car X now, and this is a way of, you know, forcing policy changes, whether somebody's dumping stuff here or, you know, not being fair in accepting our goods in exchange for theirs. And those consumption patterns are, you know, were much easier to sort of study when you didn't have the kind of combination system we have now, where, you know, the chips are tariffed. You know, they're a piece of this car has this price tag on it, and some other piece has this price tag on it, and after a while, it's, you know, in some ways, this policy will punish people who aren't looking at this globally. You know, even the manufacturers themselves, how have we let this happen? How did we let all this foreign stuff get into our so-called domestic product car here? And we, you know, we got to start doing something about that. So I think it's about forcing policy in this country as well as overseas. And I mean, I'd be all for that, say, in the pharmaceutical industry. Oh, I mean, sure. Why are we so, you know, have turned this business over to people who can, you know, turn it on or turn it off at will, and we're stuck, you know, with, you know, people paying top dollar for stuff we have absolutely no, you know, production of in this country. So,
but that's another question, Jen. That's what I'm saying. I'm everybody knows my sort of bias at this type of governing, but what if, say, what, does anybody use penicillin anymore? Actually, my old dentist said you still use penicillin for gum disease, but, or if somebody pulls a tooth and you get infected. That was a long time ago. But say penicillin's a buck a shot coming out of India, and yet by the time it gets to you in a hospital, it's $200 a shot. Okay, so you put a 50% tax on it coming from India, and now it's $1.50. I mean, where's the transfer pricing? The markup on this stuff? I mean, everybody talks about drugs, Jan, and I, by the way, I'm with you 100% on just the capability of making these drugs should be here. And oh, by the way, is the plant in India that much dirtier? That's why they can make it that much cheaper here. I don't want that, do you or Bill? But if the markup comes here, what have we solved? It's 50 cents more. What's the difference?
This is, you know, I think the strategy, like Bill was saying, I agree, Bill, that, you know, we're going to have a rough, you know, couple months here or longer to see how this plays out. But I'm interested to see how it plays out, because I think that this whole system has gotten completely unmanageable, and it's easy to build, you know, waste and unfairness into it, and everybody just accepts that as business as usual, which is why there's such an outcry against the tariff policies now. It isn't so much that they don't work. I think that the problem is they probably work too well for them to have been tried before. And knowing that people were too conservative about what other expenses might, you know, show up in the market, or what other companies might go under, or others that would flourish, nobody wanted to touch this third rail issue until now. So because it's been so, you know, studiously avoided for so long, even the discussion of it makes me think that, you know, we're dealing with something that we got to look at pretty carefully to see exactly what happens. And this is probably a set of trial balloons at some level to see how much of this, you know, can be, you know, used going forward, and, you know, what will we learn from the experience. And there's a lot of cost associated with that learning curve, I'll tell you. But until somebody tried it or said they were going to do it, we had no idea. And the system that we've had has completely sucked in my eyes anyway. So I'm all for testing the system. That, you know, just it can't be the best one imaginable, but we've gotten so used to it and built so much fraud and corruption and piggybacking, you know, expenses here and there. So it's, the consumer is just getting killed in this country, not elsewhere that I can see, but certainly here, that we got to do something different. And what it is and how far we go with it remains to be seen.
Well, two questions. One is, I didn't have your email at home, Bill, my fault. I sent out an article talking about, Jen, I think has it, Greg, has to do with, we don't have anywhere near the infrastructure in place to collect all these tariffs starting tomorrow. We don't have every single border crossing with a list of all these prices and taking the money and all that kind of, that's a big deal. I guess we got some of it in place, but what else did it say in the article, Jen? How many, it's like 6 months to wrap that up or more?
Yeah, well, that wouldn't really surprise me. I mean, given that this is so close to the shift of the administrations here, that you wouldn't have all of this in place, and it will be, you know.
Well, we haven't had it in place for how many years? I mean, why would we have?
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, that's what's kept any discussion of this off the table for so long. Well, you know, it wouldn't have been so painful maybe 20 or 30 years ago if people thought in this direction.
Well, it's somebody at the end of the day, and it's, you know, I guess this is political. Let's be a simple question first. The estimates of the administration and by the debtclock.org, by the way, is $600 billion this year are going to be paid in tariffs by somebody. What's your guys' opinion? Who pays them? I'm saying they're going to be 80%, the three of us and Greg, and 20% the other countries will absorb somehow. So that means our tax bill just went up $500 billion. And if Trump decides to take that out of the income tax, which is progressive, if you total all our taxes together then, payroll, state and local, and now this new tariff, I'm going to have us with at least 80% of all of our taxes being regressive and maybe 20% progressive, which I'm going to say is exactly what the Trump gang wants. Is that what you want?
Well, what I would want, I think, are, say, cheaper automobiles, you know, a reexamination of the whole green fascination we've had. And, you know, the tariffs will make a lot of cars unaffordable, but cars are already unaffordable now for the average person. So, you know, what are we defending here, and what are we afraid of doing?
You've got a population that can't afford cars. I keep track of, as you know, it's kind of a ridiculous little hobby of mine. I got nothing to do. I look for used trucks, old trucks, because I kind of like them, which is insane, I know, but people do insane things. Prices have already gone up. Prices have already gone up. I would hope that our population, and Bill's always so diplomatic about this stuff. They had some people interviewed last weekend about it. They went out and bought a car last weekend before the prices went up. If they don't think they're not already up, I really hope to God they didn't get a high school degree. How do they not think they're already up? You think some guy is going to sell you a car off his lot when a week from now he's competing against a car that's 20% higher?
No. It's already been built into the price.
Yeah, I mean, can there be anybody that stupid?
Depends how desperate they are for a car. They'll talk themselves into it however they can. Yeah.
So what do you think? Who ends up paying the number?
Well, the consumer that wants car A or car X at whatever price isn't going to be affected by the tariff if they can afford it.
Well, we got a few less people can afford it after the last 3 days of the market, although we have rallied up huge now.
Oh, yeah.
S&P, we're only up 80s, only down 85. But I mean,
but then, again, think of the average person too, though. Tom, speaking of the stock market, I've said this before on the program that the consumer who can't afford a car or a house or a college education or whatever else isn't really worried about the stock market. They got other things to worry about.
Well, I mean, the wealth, even in our generations. I mean, I think we're old enough where our parents are long gone, but the people who aren't. Virtually all the wealth in most of these families is either in the house the old man bought 40 years ago and it's fully paid for, or is in his 401k. I mean, it's not like I mean, this happens, but when we were youth, our parents, well, your dad was a fireman, right? As I recall.
He worked as a railway postal worker.
No, I'm saying, and Bill, then he we must have lost yeah. Bill. But the but I'm saying, in our day, people made if you grew wealth, you made $100 a week and you put 20 in the bank, right? That was your wealth grow. People didn't go out and buy stocks and at the end of 30 years decide, well, the house, you know, I didn't make any money, type of thing. But my Apple, I mean, this thing in Apple, John, I don't know, every place I've done business with, the single biggest holding of people is Apple. You know, some people have Exxon and some other stuff, but, you know, it used to be Telephone, it used to be Sears, for God's sake.
IBM.
GE. But, I mean, this Apple, and because of, mainly because of Cramer, NVIDIA is right about there. And this is a dramatic decrease in wealth in the last 4 days, and it's going on again today. Now, I'll lob this one in, and we got to go to break. We got to bring Audrey in. Every time we've sort of done this, not every time, but most times we've sort of done this in the last 20 years, we've had big sell-offs or even big buys, mostly the sell-offs. It's mid-morning of the third day, which would be today, that gives you a clue: are we going to bounce back? Or are we going to keep going? So today is actually a really key day. And like I said, the S&Ps were down last night well into the 200s, and now we're only down 104. But we were just down 88 and just popped back $16 the wrong way. So it looks like there's still a seller above here. Now, what happens today is probably the single most key day if you look back at 20 years. Now, this time could be totally different. Does that make sense? I mean, it's been we either come back from here or we don't. Anyway, S&P futures down 94, NASDAQ futures down 344. We're going to a quick break and we'll have Audrey back.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now. Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board. Greg, does this qualify as a crazy morning?
Lots of stuff going on.
SP futures down 107. Now they were down double that earlier, more than double that. And they were just down 88, like before we went to break. Now they're 107. So stuff is, at least in the trading floor, this stuff is moving. They didn't say stuff. We have the NASDAQ down 392. It was, what, down 750, Greg, last night, something like that? And I'm thinking they were down 4.5%. Now we're down 2.2%. So crazy stuff over in Europe. Whack, whack, whack. DAX down 1,000, which is more than it was an hour ago. Down 5% now. We've come back a little bit, but they have not. FTSE down 386, 4.8%. CAC around down 368. That's over 5% as well. 5%, these are big moves. They used to be like a yearly move in the market. No, not so much. Nikkei down 2,600 at 7.8%. Hang Seng down 3,000, it's 13%. Shanghai down 245, 7%. So we better make a stand here today, or this could get uglier. Friday, Dow is down 2,200. S&P is down 322. NASDAQ down 962. Oil on 169, it was under 60 bucks. $60.38. It's still so much for the low 70s range we were talking about forever ago, Greg. And Greg says that heating oil is one is leading. That's not our Bob, which is kind of strange. Brent down $1.56, 162. Natural gas up 5 cents, 389. Our Bob down 2 cents, 202. Gold is up 9 bucks, but you never know because the gold miners are down. Silver up 82 cents. It was up over a buck, 30.05. Copper down 17 cents, 422. Foreign exchange, euro is up to 109.6. It was down to 108, so this has popped. The dollar should be rallying here, and it's not. It's going the other way. British pound, 128.1. So the euro is stronger than the pound here for some reason. Today, for the first time, crypto is kind of involved in the sell-off. Bitcoin's down 2,100 bucks, 77,255, which has taken MicroStrategy down 27 bucks, which is 9%. It's taken Coinbase down 12 bucks, which is roughly 9% as well. So the stocks around the Bitcoin, maybe Greg will comment on that when he's done with traffic, weather, sport. Stocks around the Bitcoin are reacting way more than the Bitcoin itself. What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports?
Morning, everyone. It is 7:37 here in Chicago, probably about 41 degrees right now, high of 42. Possible snow later, so it's going to be cloudy and possible snow. Phoenix, 58 degrees, high of 88 today, sunny and warm. Traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 31 minutes, 48 minutes from Lake Cook. Eisenhower to the interchange, 37 minutes, 25 minutes. It's Dan Ryan from 95th. And the inbound Stevenson is 27 minutes from 294 to the Ryan. Bulls, 131, Hornets, 117. We had Ovechkin breaking Wayne Gretzky's record. And in college basketball, Florida defeating Auburn, 79-73. Houston taking down Duke, 70-67. We have the finals tonight. It starts at 7:50, Florida, Houston, the Alamo Dome. That's all I got. Back to you.
Do we have Audrey? We have you. We have you light. We got to get you heavier.
I'm here.
There you go. Okay, we can barely hear you the first time through. We still have Jan. What? We have interesting.
Morning, Jan.
Morning, Audrey.
I think we must have lost Bill somewhere along the line. But Bill filled us in on the basketball and stuff. Interesting what he said about Marquette and everything, wasn't it, Jen?
Yeah.
Bill's spot on with some of this stuff. All right, so what you see the market, we're way less down than we were earlier. The European and Asian markets are down kind of more than I thought they would be. What level here, I mean, people who have the Apples and the NVIDIAs, if you're in the, I'll use the term regular stocks, you can hurt some, but not as much as if you're in the Magnificent Seven. Those guys are, I honestly never thought I'd see Apple back down to 183. Jan, Audrey, what does this do to home wealth in your area? I mean, people are, some 401ks, but I don't know if it's as much as sometimes the rest of the world, but is this, if the market's down, well, we'd be down here, what are we down here, Greg? 25%, 23%? How big of a hit is that, Aud? And if it stays there, is it okay?
Well, nothing's, as far as I'm concerned, when the dust settles, we'll all be okay. But the immediate benefit is you can go out and get a much cheaper mortgage than you could a week ago. So you might want to run out and check those mortgage rates if you're in a buyer's market. It doesn't really change anything for me right now. My feelings on this is going to shake out. It's time we're being treated fairly. I don't know why everybody is all upset about somebody wanting to level a playing field, which is what I think this is. I don't understand why we should have to be penalized by people for wanting to trade with them. So that's my thing. I think it will sort itself out. I think it's going to be messy. It's been complacent in apathy from the United States on letting us get ripped off for years. So I think you're pulling off a bandage. It's going to bleed for a little bit. I think there's about 50 countries supposedly that have already called the White House. So we're going to see. I'm going to let it play out. I'm not particularly panicking. I think in the short term right here, if you're looking for a house, it's time to look for it. Your mortgage rates are down in the fives now, so you better go take a look.
We got a little bit of a bounce in the 10 to 30 year rates today. You're right, they got clobbered last week, but the pretty reasonable rate kick up today. I don't know where that's coming from, but
it changes so quickly. The mortgage rates, if you talk to Nancy, sometimes are bouncing so quickly. It's they try to trade the option market on a day like this.
Well, I'm going to try and trade it. Not only try and trade it, I'm going to trade it. That's what I do.
Yeah.
That's John. What do you think? I mean, we've got obviously two levels. Odds area is a lot of the cash buyers, people kind of trading, retired versus other, and people who have owned before. Commercial market. Are we talking dead and buried or what?
Dead and buried, dying a slow, terrible death. What was the statistic I read the other day that it's the 11th straight quarter in Chicago of increasing vacancy rates downtown? And of course,
that has nothing to do with what's going on now, John. That you know what I know. We all know that's been coming since COVID, and Chicago is just being in with the awful mayor that they have. It's just accelerating it.
Well, certainly not helping. What's the in the middle of all that is like the strip malls and people like that. What I haven't read anything about those guys. What's their game? They were doing bad for a while, but I don't see that many vacancies in some areas maybe that I used to. In your area, why does it? There's a few shopping centers by you that look like they're hurting for people, but the little strip malls seem like there's people. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to tell just by driving by. You don't really get a clue. What do you think?
I think that shopping is changing. I think consumers' tastes are changing. The days when I used to call up my girlfriends would go, hey, let's go shopping. Let's go to the mall, and then we'll go for lunch, because it always involves food. You just don't see that happening as much. Before, it was a recreational thing. The teenagers met at the mall. But, between COVID and the rise of Amazon and shopping online, and it's just changed completely. I think that things will, I don't see the 80s and the 90s coming back, John, do you? I don't see that happening. I think you're just going to see a change in what people are buying, how they're living. It's just different.
Yeah, the strip malls scenario, Tom, and I'm not sure what it is in the suburbs, because they don't get around that much there. But in the city, it looks like the newer strip malls they built in the last 20 years or so are actually doing better than they were 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, I have seen a lot of spaces opening up, and I think part of it is that the build out of places like that is relatively cheap compared to doing it, say, in a downtown office building for street front space or something. But I've seen a proliferation of hole in the wall restaurants, fast food places, nail salons, mostly. But I mean, there are in other ways I can see it's more abundant, like on Lawrence Avenue, the streets in my neighborhood, where there's probably more old storefront buildings vacant than ever. The ones that have a couple stores on the first floor and then up above are apartments, but the strip malls seem to be more prosperous now than before, and I think that they're the more attractive space. They look better.
They have parking where the other ones don't.
Yeah, they have the Chicago parking is its own worst enemy. So if you have off street parking, even for a strip mall, that's a huge plus for somebody who's out trying to do any kind of retail business with a car. So. I've seen some encouraging signs there, some really discouraging signs in the older buildings, and of course downtown looks pretty hopeless.
By the way,
it's
not just the older buildings. One of my clients does a lot of commercial stuff, and they're looking at a piece of property somewhere up by you, Ashland and Lawrence or somewhere, and they want to put the apartment building up with the usual three or four stores in the bottom. Well, nobody. They're trying to find a way to make the bottom floor an apartment that's secure and doesn't look like you're behind bars, because you can't rent the stores. You can't rent the downstairs.
No new building in my neighborhood, Tom, that has storefront space allocated with apartments upstairs, whether it's rental or condos. Absolutely none of that retail space has been occupied. We're going on 7 or 8 years now. These buildings are starting to show their age, and you know, they're getting tired of replacing all the paper over the windows on the first floor, but nothing has ever gone into them, and I don't see it happening either.
Well, you've got a lot of in your area, you've got hospitals and stuff moving out there, so you have jobs that are pushing your way, right? That are kind of feeding the rental and everything else.
Yeah, it's fun that, to John's point, there'll be certain places you'll see a lot of vacancies, and then there'll be none. And there are a lot of the older strip malls out here have been getting remodeled. I noticed, and getting a facelift to appeal to, you know, new tenants. To your John's point, where everything started to look old and tired. A couple of places that were older here have been completely redone, and I noticed there's new tenants in there, so that's all encouraging. But the only development, like you were just talking about, that I've seen succeed is in downtown Burr Ridge, if there is such a thing, where right off the County Line Road in Stevenson. It's restaurants, it's sort of, and the shopping area has expensive condos on top of it. It's like maybe a 4 or 5 story building, and the high end stores are on the ground floor. You've got the shopping up. Oh, there goes your dog. Excuse me, everybody. You guys talk. I'll be right back.
Okay. Maggie must be ditching her. Yeah, I mean, it seems like without. I never get myself in Audrey's business. She doesn't do a lot of rentals, but rentals kind of an odd game. But she doesn't do a lot of rentals. But if she sold somebody the place years ago, and they buy a new place and want to rent the old one, well, of course she's going to do the rental for the guy.
I'm back.
I'm just saying, Audrey, you don't specialize in a lot of rentals. But for people who you may have sold the place to and have bought another place, you'll do the rental just as an accommodation. It seems like an exorbitant big amount of those people you rent to are in the medical community that are moving out there with all the different, you know, University of Chicago has a place out there, Northwestern's got a place out there, but a lot of the hiring is in the medical area, isn't it?
Yeah, I see a lot of that. They've just opened a brand new branch of Loyola out here, a brand new branch of Northwestern. So and Silver Cross, they've all built out here in Orland, so it's interesting. But I wanted to go back to the Burr Ridge thing a minute. There's one there, and also in Bloomingdale, where they have these beautiful high-end condos, and a lot of it in Burr Ridge caters to the people who maybe got too big for the multi-million dollar, they got too old for the huge, beautiful homes out there, want to stay in the area. So this development has been very successful. It's got a lot of nice restaurants, and then there's a shopping mall with the 4 or 5 story condos upstairs, and they have concerts. It's an outdoor mall, so you're walking around, a lot of parking. That type of thing has succeeded very well in two areas.
Well, those are the one percenters. Those are the people that feel they no longer need the 10,000 square foot house when the kids have left and don't talk to them and they don't have any friends.
Right.
Don't that let me, when you grow up, don't
they
that
go down to the local restaurant and bars and shopping and have meet their friends because they're all there.
And have their spot at the bar at, what's the name of that place? Everybody's got their own spot. All the contractors.
Oh, yeah. But I forgot that, but you're right. They want to stay in the neighborhood and this place fulfilled a need. And it's the same. That's a problem with a lot of the suburbs that had built homes over since the 50s, the suburban expansion, is that they didn't plan ahead for people who wanted to stay in their neighborhood that they've grown to love. Everything's there, their shops, their doctors, their friends. So now you're seeing where it's possible, even, you know, elevator condo buildings with underground parking, or you're seeing over 55 developments. Or at least ranches, lot ranches, well, duplex ranches, townhouse ranches, huge market there.
The people you rent in the medical community, the rental prices are going up. I mean, you keep telling me that all the time. Are they just figure, well, okay, if I move to the University of Chicago and I'm with the Orland place, that they think that 3 years from now they might be in Hyde Park or they might be somewhere else. I mean, there's no reason to buy it. They've got a 2 or 3 year time horizon, or they just don't want to buy, or don't even care about a house because both the husband and wife are working, don't have any kids yet. I mean, what's the motivation to rent?
Well, I think sometimes it's just like any other executive. They're like, you have to be out in Orland in the next 60 days to start your new job, or you're being transferred to the new hospital. And if they can't find anything to buy that they like, they might just rent for a short term or a year while they're shopping around for a home. That's one of the doctors I've just rented to. He's going to wait for a year. You know, you don't really want to jump in and buy something, you know, for $500,000 and up, unless you think you're going to like it. So a lot of it's just necessity. There's enough changes. This is anybody. You know, there's enough changes in your life that maybe you want to shop the neighborhood, see where you really want to live, what's important to you. It's if you're not familiar with an area, you're coming from out of state, especially, it's hard to make a snap judgment on where you want to live for the next 5, 10, 20 years.
A lot of people, when they look at, maybe this is more of a Nancy question, but you know this stuff too.
I'm here.
Oh, hey, you are here.
Hey, good morning.
What are you doing here? You getting out here to tell water? You going to meet for breakfast somewhere afterward, or what?
What a great idea.
We're waiting for you to give us the money to buy us breakfast.
Oh, God. That never changes,
John's
does it, John?
Too. We hate to tell you. We're a secret society, Tim.
Oh, God. There's no question that you females have a union of some kind. I don't know who the union leader is, but...
I'm a union guy, Tom.
Yes.
Thank you, John. John's our leader.
Oh, that's... Now we're in trouble.
You're in trouble.
Nancy, does it make... You've never once mentioned that you look at somebody's essentially wealth portfolio when you're looking at a mortgage. Is that true, or am I speaking? In other words, if somebody had $2 million last week and now they've got $1.6 million, it doesn't matter when they look for a mortgage, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Does anybody ever say, "I'm going to pay my mortgage out of my dividend stream of these stocks"?
No, Tom. I haven't got that clientele.
Well, I mean, you know, some people. I mean, that there are people, you know, there are still stocks that are like that you get your dividend stuff. Well,
I mean, no, I understand, but the bottom line is you're making a commitment that you're going to pay, so it doesn't matter. I mean, even if that were the case, I wouldn't be reporting it that way.
Just be reporting it as income.
Right, correct. That's it. I mean, that's it. And you have to have a proven track record that you have. You at least have to have 2 years of this stream flowing.
Well, for instance, we have a lot of people here at PTI, a lot of dance clients, that have Ford Motor Company. Now, it's not a plug for Ford or anything, but they've paid a solid 6% for, you know, however many years. So if somebody had, you know, is not working, has his Social Security, and I hope he's not all in Ford in his portfolio, but if he did, he went to get a mortgage and say, "Hey, I make X number a quarter for my Ford dividend," does that count, I guess, is my question. I'd never even asked this question before.
You know, Tom, it definitely counts if you're in your RMD. Okay, if you're retired and you're using your RMD and you have so much you can pull out per month. They don't necessarily, what they look for is it legitimate stuff in there? Do you own it? Is it in your name?
Okay.
In other words, like your statement, is your statement coming from PTI?
Well, we would hope, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But then do you show that the client owns the stock, or does PTI own
the stock? No, the client owns it. It's just in street name here.
Right, but
yeah.
A lot of people, I mean, we've already run across one where it really wasn't the firm owned the stock and didn't put it in her name.
We don't own any of our clients' stock. Our clients own their own stock.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what we look for, the difference between the two. And I have had one where I brought it back to the client and said, "Do you realize the stock is not, none of this is in your name?"
Really? So whose name was it in?
Pardon me?
Whose name was it in?
It was in the broker's firm's name.
Okay, but it still should be.
No, it was not. That's where it's hard to believe that this can happen this way, but when you see that, then it's a big red flag for me.
But I mean, if you transfer in 1,000 shares of IBM, it's going to be in Nancy Graham's statement is it's your IBM. I don't know how we get involved other than sending a statement.
Well, this guy was, he was actually, running to her house and doing all these things. Just doing all these things that made me think like, oh, this isn't right.
Oh, yeah. Well, that sounds, we're talking like fraud. We don't do that.
It's like Judy Holliday, Born Yesterday.
Yeah.
She signed all this stuff. She doesn't know what it is.
Unfortunately, in your question, we would be looking at that.
Okay.
And it's unfortunate that this could go on. I mean, most seniors don't know the difference between those two statements.
Well, I would got to try.
I understand, but that's what we look for. I don't really care what's in your portfolio. They care more that you have a track record of getting the income, which you would have, okay? They want to know that your R&D, you're required to take out whatever your requirement is will meet the needs of the loan. And then we look to make sure it's in your name.
Okay, so you're talking about the IRA must take out after age 70 or whatever.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. That you've hit the age where the R&D kicks in. We look at that. And then if we're using it for income, let's say with someone under that age, then if that's the only income, it can become more of a stickler.
Okay, but this is not a problem you normally run into. I mean, people have
have jobs. I mean, most people do have jobs, and if you don't have a job, then the Social Security works. But if we have to look at the assets, then we do.
You know what you're saying? A lot of the houses that you're selling now are cash from one to the other. Somebody's upsizing, somebody else is downsizing, but a lot of the transfers are really in equity in the houses you just sold, right? What are you saying?
Where did I go? I dropped off, guys.
She's chasing little Maggie around.
No, I think that she accidentally dropped.
Oh, well. I guess it's all different kinds is really what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, there is no one scenario where we just take apart a portfolio and say that. No. We just look at the whole thing. But this name thing is really important, and I don't think enough people and all listeners out there should really look at what their parents are doing.
Yeah.
Just take a peek. Make sure it's the way it is. And we know PTI is safe. We heard it here.
Well, safer if that's what you want to do. We have people that don't want to be safe as well. So, I mean,
Yeah, but you would never not have the money in.
Oh,
the
God, no, hell no.
It's typically just taboo.
It's not here anywhere. It's either at RBC, one of our two clearing firms, or Interactive Brokers. That's who holds your money.
Yeah, so you understand on top of that,
The most sacred thing is it's your dough. God.
Right, and this woman kept thinking it was her money. The guy kept telling her it was her money. And then finally, he just started making, he made it up where he had a Fidelity letterhead and showed it on there. Very, very unfortunate situation.
Sounds like he was a disciple of Bernie Madoff.
He thought Bernie Madoff is brilliant.
A lot of people who are crooks are pretty clever.
It's sad. But that's for the listeners. Please look at your parents' stuff. Please.
Oh, yeah.
Just take a peek.
All the years I was on the board, we had to deal with Bernie Madoff because he invented payment for order flow.
Yeah, so
He's a character. We'll take 1 minute over here, but... what happened there is the CBOE, Chicago Board Options Exchange, bought the Cincinnati Stock Exchange. So it became a CBO sub. But somewhere in the SEC balls of rules, if an exchange buys most of the seats, they didn't buy all of them because Bernie Madoff had like 5 seats. The exchange can only vote once, even though they had like 100 and some seats. So Bernie actually outranked the CBOE, even though the CBOE owned the place. John, have you heard anything so crazy in your life?
No.
So we couldn't essentially shut Bernie off, even though we knew that payment for order flow was going to be the demise of what was a pretty good industry, which it really has. Because when I say demise, people today think it's fine. They trade for not very much, and because the firms get payment. But they used to be the customer, now they're not. And that's a big difference in how you're treated by people. Now, PTI doesn't do that. But most people would rather, they trade all the time, unfortunately, would rather be at Robinhood because they think it's free. Well, Robinhood's selling their order flow to giving somebody a peek at their stuff. We don't do that. So try and tell people when they think it's free, and they're happy. So it's one of those deals. But no, Bernie invented all that. I'll explain next time you're on how that all worked, because he guaranteed you the New York bid and ask, and every time it traded in the middle, he made money. So it was he did pretty well with it. We couldn't stop him, even though we tried. Anyway, so Nance, what do you make of, real quick, what's your guess on the $600 billion you're talking about being taxes on the tariffs? How much are people like us going to pay versus the other countries?
I have no idea. I just think it's going to be a nightmare keeping track of it. I actually heard Musk came up with just stop all the tariffs. Stop them all.
Yeah.
And I that might be the answer. Then nobody has said, this would be an accounting nightmare on tariffs anyways. Just stop them all.
By the way, I was on the under on 6 months for the Musk-Trump divorce. Did you guys take the over? Because if so, you guys owe me dinner.
Well, he was only supposed to stay for, I think, 130 days anyway. This wasn't the entire four-year deal. This was just a short-term hire.
If they remember, Ramaswamy was in there with him and then was out even before the inauguration.
He was out before he was in.
Yeah.
He's running for governor.
I see them as transient positions at best. You know?
Yeah, he's running for governor. He's in Ohio. He'll be better off there. He'll be more valued there.
Well, anyway, guys, we got to dash. Thank all of you. Thank Bill if he's still listening. SP Futures down 122.
And John will meet you for breakfast.
Well,
John's always send the bill to Tom.
John's always willing to pay because he's never there.
He's going to be the bill money, Tom.
Well, if he's there, he'll pay. We've ducked down to only down 88 now three or four times, and every time we come flying back down to 125. So it'll be interesting. We'll talk about this tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks.
That's all, folks.